Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from Florida United Businesses Association. FUBA is a statewide trade association representing Florida businesses. FUBA also publishes The Advisor, a pocket-sized guide to the Florida legislature. More at fuba.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
The Florida legislature may be nearing a budget deal, but old hands warn those agreements aren't etched in stone.
My first year here, there was a deal struck, and none of the things that were struck in the deal passed.
Also tonight, the Florida House and Senate may be inching closer to striking a gambling deal.
It tells me that we're serious about getting something done. I appreciate that you came in here ready to get the ball moving down the field.
We'll also get an update on a bill loosening the rules for unjustly jailed defendants to receive state compensation and raise a glass to Florida's prohibition-era wall between hard liquor and groceries, a wall the legislature has now torn down. I'm Tom Flanagan, the midpoint of the next to last week of the Florida legislative session, and this is Capitol Report. Spending offers are flying back and forth between House and Senate leaders, but Nick Evans reports time is running short on this year's legislative session.
There are few cliches Florida lawmakers invoke more often than landing a plane. If a speaker's going on too long, bring it in for a landing. If a lawmaker is negotiating with other members, I think we're going to be able to bring this in for a landing. But when it comes to the turbulence surrounding this year's budget, drafters may be keeping the fasten seatbelt sign on.
Remember, deal struck means nothing final, right? My first year here, there was a deal struck, and none of the things that were struck in the deal passed.
That's Senate Minority Leader Oscar Brainin. Late Tuesday, the House and Senate seemed ready to begin conference, a negotiation process where lawmakers hash out the specific appropriations for previously agreed-upon dollar amounts, known as allocations. But Wednesday morning, Senate Appropriations Chair Jack Latvala pumped the brakes. The Clearwater Republican told the blog Florida Politics, "There's no deal," before tweeting that any agreement would be announced by the presiding officers. Following a different conference on gaming, Bradenton Republican Senator Bill Galvano tried to smooth things over.
I wouldn't classify anything as having fallen apart. I think that when we closed business yesterday, the major issues had been agreed on, and at this point there's some tweaking going on what I call second and third tier issues.
And Senate President Joe Negron elaborated on the state of affairs after Wednesday's floor session.
We would accept the House position in K-12 and their funding priorities, and that the House would accept the funding priorities and the policy in the area of our universities and our colleges.
That means the Senate is greenlighting dollars for teacher bonuses and a new charter school initiative called Schools of Hope. Next up, Senate Bill 10, which would build a reservoir south of Lake Okeechobee. It's one of Negron's chief priorities this year.
And then the House would agree to accept Senate Bill 10 in exchange for some other House priorities that we're in the process of delineating, but that would include the House position on RLE.
RLE is required local effort, a stream of education dollars derived from property taxes. Property values are rising, which would normally mean more money coming in. But although the rate is staying static, the House considers that a tax increase. To keep the required local effort where it is, the House appears ready to budge on borrowing. Negron explains their agreement allows for $800 million in bonding to build his reservoir. But likely lost in the back and forth are Governor Rick Scott's priorities. Although he holds the veto pen, he can't add in the incentive and tourism dollars he wants. The legislature has until Tuesday to complete a budget if they want to get out on time. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
Florida lawmakers are beginning to make headway when it comes to finding a middle ground between the House and Senate gambling plans. We get more on that story from Regan McCarthy.
During the third gambling conference between House and Senate members, Representative Jose Diaz presented the House offer, which includes places where House members want to hold steady and other places where they're willing to budge.
For those reviewing it on the Senate, it might look like little steps because our bills were so far apart to begin with. But I will tell you that each and every one of these involved a meaningful conversation with my colleagues and with other members of the House. We feel that this puts us in a position where we can come towards the Senate position on a lot of things, retain the House position on a lot of things, and possibly have a bill that can actually pass the House and hopefully pass the Senate.
It's an offer Bill Galvano, who's overseeing his chamber's piece of the negotiation, calls substantial.
It tells me that we're serious about getting something done. I appreciate that you came in here ready to get the ball moving down the field.
One place where Diaz says he's carved out some wiggle room is in the state's gambling agreement, or compact, with the Seminole tribe. Diaz told reporters following the Wednesday morning conference the House is willing to let the tribe offer more types of games in its casinos.
Yes, there would be craps and roulette at the Seminole facility, something that they've asked for in exchange for a higher number on the percentage that they pay the state.
And Galvano says that move will likely help get the tribe on board. Once the House and Senate work out a gambling deal, the Seminole tribe will need to sign off on any changes to its gambling agreement with the state. Another big issue the House offer provides some give on is decoupling. Diaz says the House would let most dog and horse tracks decouple as long as their communities approve it through a referendum.
That was just a suggestion by a few members of the House that I've been talking to. They strongly felt that the coupling happened through referendum, that decoupling should also happen through referendum.
Decoupling is the idea of allowing paramutuals to continue offering games such as poker without requiring them to hold a certain number of live races. Discussions between both chambers are expected to continue. Leaders from both the House and Senate say they're happy with the direction talks are taking so far. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
There was some tax news out of Washington, D.C. today, and there was also some tax news out of Tallahassee, Florida. The House today approved a proposed constitutional amendment that would increase the homestead exemption for property owners, despite arguments that such an increase would hurt local governments. Under the measure, the exemption on non-school property taxes would go up by $25,000. Supporters say taxpayers will save over $750 million from that plan, but opponents say it's irresponsible, even if it seems popular. The measure now goes to the Senate, where the bill has only passed one committee with just over 1 week remaining in session. If approved in the Senate, voters would have the final say-so on the plan on the 2018 general election ballot. Still to come on Capitol Report, a bill allowing the state's largest electric utility to charge its customers for out-of-state natural gas exploration is on the move.
We had something called the nuclear cost recovery fee that was passed when I was out of the legislature. But, you know, it came up to bite a whole bunch of us in the butt since then.
Florida lawmakers want to make it easier for death row exonerees with a prior felony record to receive compensation.
We passed this bill in 2008, knowing that the people who would most benefit from it would never benefit from it. This is a good correction of a bad bill.
State lawmakers propose tightening the oversight on the community redevelopment agencies some local governments use for local building projects.
Fort Lauderdale CRA, thousands of dollars in tax money was spent on a farewell event for a city commissioner and a retirement party for a city employee.
And the wall separating hard liquor and groceries in Florida's food stores has come tumbling down, at least as far as the Florida legislature is concerned.
The clerk will lock the machine and announce the vote.
58 yeas, 57 nays, Mr. Speaker.
By your vote, the bill passes. Read the next bill.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. abletrust.org.
A proposal allowing Florida Power and Light to charge customers for exploratory natural gas drilling has cleared a key Senate hurdle despite numerous consumer concerns. Len Hatter reports the company calls the move a hedge against future fuel increases.
Florida Power and Light's Sam Forrest likens the measure to homeowners insurance.
The comments with respect to hedging and hedging losses, I very much view hedging as an insurance policy, much like your homeowner's insurance. Right? You pay a premium, your house doesn't burn down at the end of the year, you don't complain about the premium, you don't ask for your money back, and that's basically what the opposition is doing here, is asking for their money back. I very much view this as a premium that you would pay in order to ensure yourself that if gas prices do go higher, you have some modicum of protection, and that's exactly what this bill does.
But Republican Senator Jack Latvala does not buy that argument.
So I'm just trying to show everybody, make sure everybody understands that this, for the first time, we're making people potentially pay for exploration, and the utility will get a rate of return on that exploration.
Latvala says consumers will bear all the risks of the investment, and that's a problem for the many environmental and consumer groups opposing the bill. Among them, the AARP, Sierra Club, and Kim Ross of Rethink Energy Florida. She says investments in natural gas amount to money that's not going into renewable energy sources.
As has been stated, this bill will increase Florida's reliance on natural gas. It will lead to greater investments in natural gas infrastructure, such as pipelines and natural gas power plants. That investment, in turn, serves as a disincentive to investment by our utilities in renewable energy.
At issue are provisions in Republican Senator Aaron Bean's bill that allow the state's utility regulation agency, the Public Service Commission, to approve cost recovery for natural gas investments. Florida Power and Light has invested in an Oklahoma company that does fracking for natural gas. Last year, the Florida Supreme Court ruled the PSC overstepped its authority in allowing FPL to charge customers for that investment. Latvala likens the measure to similar rules allowing companies to charge customers for nuclear or power plants that may never be built.
We had something called the nuclear cost recovery fee that was passed when I was out of the legislature, but you know, it came up to bite a whole bunch of us in the butt since then, and I just want to make sure everybody understands, you know, that we're breaking some new ground here. Maybe it's okay. FPL is a good corporate citizen, okay? Maybe it's okay, but I just think everybody ought to understand potentially what's happening.
Latvala pushed through several amendments to the bill, including one prohibiting companies from investing in fracking or similar practices in Florida. Another requires FPL to only invest in natural gas wells that have a strong likelihood of producing natural gas. The measure passed 7-2-3 in the Rules Committee and is now heading to the Senate floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Meanwhile, a federal court judge in Fort Myers is allowing seismic testing for oil and gas reserves in Big Cypress National Preserve. The judge did not rule in favor of environmental advocacy groups this week in a lawsuit against the National Park Service and a Texas oil company, as we hear from John Davis with member station WGCU.
Environmental advocates initially filed the lawsuit against the National Park Service and the Burnett Oil Company last fall after seismic testing was green-lighted for a 110-square-mile area of the preserve. The company wants to search for potential underground stores of oil and gas. The suit alleged that the National Park Service should have completed a comprehensive environmental study on potential impacts of the seismic survey. The process involves using 33-ton thumper trucks that lower metal plates to the ground. They emit seismic vibrations to help find geologic formations that may contain oil and gas. The Conservancy of Southwest Florida was one of the groups that filed the lawsuit. The Conservancy's Amber Crooks says they're concerned about the impact of the seismic survey work on wildlife and their natural habitat.
The Big Cypress is home to some really important species for Florida, red-cockaded woodpecker, wood stork, Florida panther, and they make the preserve their home as a refuge, let alone with the concerns that we have about soil rutting and vegetation being flattened or cut, disturbing this wildlife. There's a lot of reason for concern for this project.
The Burnett Company began preliminary scouting work on the project in late March, but the seismic testing itself was slated to begin this month. The company points to 47 conditions they're required to meet to minimize negative impacts, like staying away from wading bird colonies and repairing soil rutting caused by the large thumper trucks. The environmental groups, led by the Natural Resources Defense Council, have not yet decided whether to appeal the federal judge's recent ruling to allow the seismic testing in Big Cypress. I'm John Davis in Fort Myers.
Florida is the only state in the nation that bars people with a prior felony record from receiving compensation after they were wrongfully incarcerated for a new crime. But as Sasha Cordner reports, could legislation to allow more people to receive compensation be in trouble with two diverging bills in the House and Senate?
In 2008, the Florida legislature passed a law with the goal of allowing people who were wrongfully incarcerated to receive compensation. But it included the so-called clean hands provision.
Under Florida law, compensation is still not available to the individual if there has been another felony conviction of any kind on their record. Someone like William Dillon, who after 26 years in prison for a murder he did not commit, could not seek compensation because he had a past conviction for drug possession, a quaalude.
That's Fort Lauderdale Democratic Representative Bobby DeBose, who's sponsoring a bill to relax the statute a bit to allow more people to be compensated.
It is time we address this inequitable situation. This bill does not eliminate the clean hands provision from our compensation statute. Under the bill, a wrongfully incarcerated person may receive compensation if he or she has one or more third-degree felony convictions arising out of a single criminal act or transaction.
Still, his bill won't help death row exonerees like Herman Lindsay.
You don't know whether you're going to make it out that jail cell. When you're faced to die and you're there in that Florida State prison and you sitting there while they're doing execution and you hoping and you praying that the courts find that you wasn't the really one that did it. You hoping they find the one that did it so you can go home. That is a pain.
Convicted in 2006 for murder he did not commit, Lindsay spent 3 years on death row until the Florida Supreme Court unanimously overturned his conviction. By that point, the clean hands provision was in place, so because of his prior record, Lindsay never received compensation.
If I commit a crime with a victim and I go to court, I am going to get sentenced and the court is going to impose victim restitution. I am now a victim of the state, and this bill is saying because I have a prior conviction, I shouldn't deserve no restitution.
Andy says he, along with many other exonerees, still won't under DeBose's bill.
This might allow two more out of the 26 to do it. And I hope that we can come in the future and possibly take this out of this bill. Take this out of the bill. Don't make me a victim and then show me prejudice against me. That is even more hurtful to do.
That's why Lindsay says he's very supportive of the Senate proposal. Fleming Island Republican Rob Bradley, the bill's Senate sponsor, has filed this measure for several years, but for the first time since filing it, he says he decided to do away with the clean hands provision this year after hearing compelling testimony from Lindsay in a prior committee.
The amendment removes the clean hands provision altogether for a person who is convicted of a felony prior to their wrongful incarceration. This will make this group of people eligible for compensation for the wrongful incarceration.
And Bradley says his goal is to get this done.
As long as I'm here, I'm going to file this bill every year until we pass it. And we're going to try again this year, and I hope this is the year that we finally get this done. And it should have been done in 2008 when the bill originally went through. I hope that we're able to get it done this year and make this good legislation law.
Both bills are scheduled to be taken up on the floor this week, but it's unclear which bill will actually be voted on. According to DeBose's office, they're still in talks with Bradley's office to work that out. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Legislation changing local control of community redevelopment agencies is heading to the Florida Senate from the House, but it's unlikely the Senate will take the House bill. The Senate's version had already died in committee, as we hear from Sarah Mueller.
The Tallahassee Community Redevelopment Agency sold two downtown buildings last month to a developer to create an area of new residential housing, office space, and a hotel with views of the Capitol building. The development, valued at $158 million, is planned for north of the city's Cascades Park, which opened in 2014 and was also built using CRA funding. Agencies use tax funding to build things like parks, museums, and sidewalks. CRA projects in other areas include a soccer stadium in Orlando, affordable housing for artists in exchange for community engagement events in West Palm Beach County, and an affordable housing development in the city of Miami. The agencies partner with local cities or counties to renew blighted or rundown areas, but Valrico Republican Representative Jake Rayburn says some are wasting taxpayer money.
Hallandale Beach, $7.4 million. Had to be cut out of the agency's budget at the end of the year because they ran out of money. And nobody knew why they ran out of money. Gross misuse of taxpayer dollars. Fort Lauderdale CRA. Thousands of dollars in tax money was spent on a farewell event for a city commissioner and a retirement party for a city employee.
Rayburn's legislation requires more oversight of CRAs and creates new financial disclosure standards. And it also shifts creating new CRAs from local governments to the state legislature after October 1st. Florida has 222 community development agencies. Bill Peoples with the Florida Redevelopment Association says some of them are better than others, but he says the agencies are already held accountable.
First of all, their boards are comprised of elected officials, and so they have the same accountability that you have, that cities have, that counties have. There is also a long and rich tradition of legislators bringing to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee requests to audit local CRAs.
Democratic Representative Barry Russell opposes moving the creation of CRAs to the legislature. He was the mayor of Lauderdale Lakes for 8 years and served on the local CRA. He says there are projects in his city valued at about $300 million because of the agency.
Also, there are other cities in my district that are beneficiaries of the CRA program. And I think it is important for us to understand that local government needs to have the ability to govern themselves. It's important, yes, to have the support of the state and the federal government, but I think we know best what is good for our city.
Republican Senator Tom Lee's companion bill got stuck in committee earlier this month. He says the current law allows devoting money to projects that don't improve people's lives in urban blight or impoverished areas.
I do know that there are examples out there and that those examples have given rise to a statute that was just very, maybe was written loosely on purpose. Maybe that's the reason it was done, is so that these things could become slush funds for pet projects. I don't know.
The Senate can take up the House's legislation if it chooses to, but it's unlikely to do so. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sarah Mueller.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally, tonight, as you hear this edition of Capitol Report, it's after 5. The workday is done, for most of us anyway, so how about a nice, relaxing adult beverage? And before you take a sip, you might want to raise your glass to salute a long-standing wall that, as far as the Florida legislature is concerned, is coming down. The Florida House has voted to tear down the so-called liquor wall by a razor-thin margin. It's a rare issue that doesn't fall along party lines, giving a brief glimpse into lawmakers' individual beliefs. Kate Payne reports.
Wednesday's House vote on a prohibition-era liquor law couldn't have been closer.
The clerk will lock the machine and announce the vote.
58 yeas, 57 nays, Mr. Speaker.
By your vote, the bill passes. Read the next bill.
58 to 57. Close enough to make anyone want to drink. It may sound strange, but allowing grocery stores to sell hard liquor next to beer and wine became one of the headline issues this session. Coral Springs Democratic Representative Jared Moskowitz was keeping track as the hours of debate ticked away.
We spent more time asking questions on this bill than on an $80-plus billion budget. Members, it's time to move on from this issue.
So why do lawmakers care? Longwood Republican Representative Scott Plakin has an idea.
But let's be honest of how we got here. The big box stores wanted more money. Who wouldn't?
Since the 1930s, the state has kept hard liquor out of grocery stores, the whiskey away from the Wheaties. Mom-and-pop shops and larger retailers like Publix have invested in building standalone stores. But Target and Walmart want to tear down that metaphorical wall.
I was elected by my constituents to do many, many, many things. But nowhere on the list of reasons that I am here is to make life easier for Walmart.
Orlando Democratic Representative Carlos Guillermo Smith is worried about small businesses. And Representative Ray Fine, a Palm Bay Republican, doesn't want to put more liquor in the hands of minors and alcoholics.
If people agree that by creating more access to this product, more of it will be sold, then it is impossible not to believe that the negative effects of that product won't scale linearly.
But supporters say alcohol won't flood the market because the bill won't change how the state hands out liquor licenses. And Hialeah Republican Representative Brian Avila isn't convinced underage drinking will increase.
The U.S. Substance Abuse Administration has said that only 6% of individuals get their alcohol from theft in stores. The overwhelming majority of people get their alcohol, whether beer, wine, or spirits, from their own home.
The bill comes at a time when Floridians can get liquor delivered to their homes at the touch of a button. Tampa Republican Representative James Grant says if lawmakers are really worried about small retailers and increased access, they should get with the times.
When Amazon announced 2 weeks ago that by Prime you could say, hey, Alexa, I want a handle of X, that is access.
The liquor wall is a rare issue that doesn't fall along party lines. Carlos Guillermo Smith says that's a good thing.
It means members have to reflect upon themselves. How does this affect my constituents? But also, how does this affect my core values?
Representative Larry Lee, a Port St. Lucie Democrat, says some of his colleagues weren't ready to make that call.
On this very boat, you're going to find people who can't make their mind up that's going to walk out that door or already walked out the door.
In a rather dramatic ending, five House lawmakers didn't vote, letting the measure barely slip across the finish line. The Senate has already okayed the bill. Tearing down the liquor wall is now up to the governor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Sarah Mueller, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report, and join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2017 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from Florida United Businesses Association. FUBA is a statewide trade association representing Florida businesses. FUBA also publishes The Advisor, a pocket-sized guide to the Florida legislature. More at fuba.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.